We're holding on Nun Gimel Amud Beis, 12 lines, 11 lines from the bottom, a line begins down. We're in the middle of discussing a machlokas. Now, our Mishnah had said that if you have an aver from if you have a limb from a living person or from a dead person, that yesh alein bosu karor, it has enough flesh on it that it would regenerate if it was still attached to the person, then we said it's metame b'mago maso of oil, and a nazir has to shave because of it, and then bring his korbanos and lose his naziros, etc., etc. What happens if ein alein bosu karor? What happens if there's not enough flesh to there's not enough flesh that it would have regenerated? But on the other hand, it is an aver. So the question is, oihel certainly doesn't, oihel certainly it's not metame. But the question is maga and masa, if he touches it or carries it. So Rabbi Yochanan had said that that's not one of the cases where the nazir forfeits the days of the nazirus. He did so far. Rish Lakish says he does. And we discussed because the next Mishnah doesn't mention it. And Rabbi Yochanan says there's a reason why the next Mishnah doesn't mention it, etc. So now, the Gemara says, let's analyze what scenario that they're talking about. Hi, Avram and Ames Heshidom. What exactly is the scenario involving this Avra from a dead body? We're talking about the person died, and then afterwards a limb was detached from the person, and you're talking about the question of whether that limb is Mutam Mago Hamasa. And again, we're talking about where the limb does not have enough flesh on it that if the person was living and if it was still attached to him, it wouldn't be able to regenerate. Eventually, it would need to be amputated. So that's ein alein bosu karor. So what exactly is the scenario that the Gemara asked? Ide ispe etzim kisa'ura. If there is a bone inside that aver the size of a grain of barley, my time at Rabbi Yochanan. Well, then why does Rabbi Yochanan say it's not matam mago hamasa? After all, we learned in our Mishnah that even just a bone by itself, without any flesh on it at all, is enough to be matam of mago masa. It certainly wouldn't be worse because of the little bit of flesh on it. The de less be etzim kisa'ura, and if there's no etzim kisa'ura, my time is the Rish Lakish. Then why is Rish Lakish saying that it's matame? If there's no etzim kisa'ura, it doesn't have enough flesh kedela halos arufa. So what kind of chashivus does it have? The answer is Amalach Rish Lakish l'olam de lesbe etzim kisa'ura. So Rish Lakish will tell you that he's talking about even where it does not have an etzim kisa'ura in it. Vafilo hochi rachmona ravye. Nevertheless, Rish Lakish says the Torah is still marba. The Torah is still including that sort of thing is matam of mago hamasa. And how he gets that, we're going to bring two brises, and then after we bring both the brises, then afterwards, in the middle of Nundalad Amun Aleph, then we're going to talk about where Rish Lakish gets from these braises. So it's really primarily from the second braisa that such a limb is matam of mago hamasa, even though there's no bone the size of a grain of barley. So again, we could be talking about, as we talked about yesterday, that you have, this is an aver from a very small child, or even from an incompletely formed child who was stillborn, where there's no etzim kisa'urda in it, but nevertheless, it is a complete aver. So like this, Titania, we learn in one braisa. Now you have a pasuk like this. It says about the in the parasha of Parah Adruma, at the beginning of Parashas Chukas, you have a pasuk, anyone who touches on the surface of the field. So let's quote the whole pasuk first, and then the Gemara is going to go and explain it phrase by phrase. Anybody who touches anything on the surface of the field, bachalal cherev, on a corpse, on a dead body that was killed by the sword, or even mace, or in a dead body, or in a human bone, or in a kever, then the pasuk says he'll be tamei for 7 days. So now we're going to darshan that pasuk phrase by phrase and see that it's talking about many different sources of tumah that come from a mess. So when it starts off, so apnei hasada, the words apnei hasada refer to zehamahel apnei ames. That refers to somebody who overshadows over the mess. In other words, like this, you have a couple of psukim before. It says zois hatorah odem ki yomus ba'oyel. That you know from that. But if there's a mess inside an oyel, inside a building or a tent or what have you, and you're in the same building or in the same tent, then you're going to become tomei. Fine. But where would you know that if you are overshadowing the mess? So let's say you have a mess lying there in the field and you bend over to look at him. Where do we see that you're tummy from that? So from that, we have from this pasuk, al pnei hasadeh. And the point is, in other words, because it doesn't say that he touches the mess. So we're talking about that he's overshadowing the mess. The Rosh points out that like this. I mean, it didn't really need to say. Well, so the Rosh points out actually there are actually other drushes that the Gemara learns in other places in Shas from these words al pnei hasad. Rabbi Shmuel learns from that it means that if a baby dies inside the mother's womb, then it's not metame until it actually comes out. Rabbi Akiva darshens it to teach us about a golol and doifik, which we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, certain things that are used to cover the kever. But the Rosh says that here we're primarily focusing on the words al pnei. Those drushes of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva are focusing on the word hasadeh. So Rabbi Shmuel is going to say that it excludes the baby because the baby can't be called et hasadeh. Hasadeh implies an open area, which the baby is inside the closed up space, the womb. And Rabbi Akiva is going to doubt that it means anything that's on the surface of the field, which is the golol and doif. But here we're focusing on the words al pnei, where it means, in other words, that he's over the sadeh, but not actually touching it. So that's hamal al pnemis. Next, when it says b'chalal, when it says in a corpse, ze'evim enachai v'yeshle l'hal sarucha, that refers to not actually a dead person, because then you have later in the pasuk the next thing it says oy b'meis. So here it refers to a limb from a living person that was cut off, but it could still regenerate. Where again, there's enough flesh on it that if it was attached to the person, it would still be able to regenerate. So then. The word b'cholol is implying that's metame as well. The mefarish, in fact, the mefarish has a girsa ze'ever hanechlo min hachai. The word cholol means a corpse, means a dead body, but it means, in other words, over here, a limb that was made dead from a person. In other words, it was alive; it would have stayed fully alive had it been attached to the person, but now it's not alive anymore. Now it's dead. Anyway, so that's what we learned from the word b'chalal. Then continues the b'raisa cherev, when it says a sword, and obviously there's no difference between a person killed by a sword or a person dies or is killed by any causes. So therefore, the word sword over there teaches us the concept in halacha, cherev hareza k'cholo. The sword is like the dead person himself. Meaning, in other words, that a metal keli that touches a mess becomes an avia voisatoma. Like this, you have normally the mess himself, of course, is an avia voisatoma. He can be metame people and he can be metame kalim that touch him. Like this, what we're saying is the sword or any metal keli that touches a mess has the same din. It's considered like the mess itself, and therefore it's able to be metame something else as an avatoma. So Tosfos brings over here that refers only to metal kalim, and some Rishonim learn that way. The Rosh brings, and then Tosfos brings later on Nundalad Omen Beis, that there is a Rishon named Rabbi Yitzchok Misimponti, who holds that actually that concept of Cherev Harei Kacholol applies to non-metal kalim as well. That any keli that touches a mess would have this din, would be an Avia Vesatoma. Further on Nundalad Omen Beis, we're going to discuss that point in a little more detail. Anyway, we learned that from the word cherev. And when we talk about it over there, further on Nundalad Omen Beis, we'll talk about there's a lot of different opinions among Rishonim to what extent is it like the mess. When we say it's an Aviyah Vaisatoma, to what extent would it even be, for example, you can't be under the same oil as it? We'll talk about that soon, as Hashem. Anyway, we learned that from the word cherev. Next, when the pasuk continues, oy b'meis, when it says the person touches a dead body, ze'ever ha'nechlo min ha'mes, that again refers to not an entire body, but just a limb that was torn off a mess. We're again the same thing, as long as again, it's metame when a person is touches it or is overshadowing it or whatever. Maga masa oil, all of that. So now, so far, we don't see in the Braisa yet whether we're talking about Yeshba Lahala Sarucha or Ein Lahala Sarucha. We're going to get back to that point later on after we bring the rest of this Braisa and then another Braisa, which refers specifically to touching. And then Resh Lakish is going to derive from that his point that even if there's no Etzim Kesa'ura in there, it's still Matamib Magov Masa. Hiu Bapashtos, when we're talking about Oihel as well, then we're talking about where it has a bone in it the size of a grain of barley. So therefore, it's going to, therefore even Rabbi Yochanan, of course, is going to agree that that's important enough that it'll be matame even by Oihel. Next word in the pasuk is oy be'etzem adam, or a person touches a human bone. So zer roiva atzamos. So from there we learn that if a person is under an oihel with or touches or whatever a quarter kav of bones, then he's tame. Tosfos points out that that's actually, we learned before, that that is actually a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, the concept of a quarter kav of bones. Here, the fact that we have it in the pasuk is more of an asmachta. It's not the actual source of it. The actual source of that din is a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, but we have a hint for it in the pasuk. Next, the pasuk says oy bakover, or the person touches a grave. So the zek keber sasum, that refers specifically to a sealed grave. Because we learn in a braisa that when you don't have a keber sasum, Tosfos points out that this line that the Gemara is quoting, is not really necessary for what we're talking about over here, but we'll explain, in other words, in a second, that there's a difference between a keber and not a keber. So the tumma breaks through and goes upward and downward. Meaning, in other words, like this. What you have is like this. If you have a mess lying on the ground, just out in the open, for example, then the din is only what's directly above the mess or directly below the mess is going to be tumma. The tumma does not spread to the sides. Now, if you have a special case where a mess is buried inside a kever, and Tosfos discusses over here based on other Gemaras, that what happens is you have inside the kever, you have at least a tefach of space between the mess and the top of the, and the roof of the kever. So you have at least a tefach space between the top of the mess and the roof of the kever. And you also don't have any spaces of a tefach in the side of it, on the sides of the mess. Then what happens is the entire kever is metame, any place a person touches it, and also above it and below it. So even a person touches the part of the kever, which is not directly over the mess, but because there is this oihel tefach inside, and there's no oihel tefach anywhere else in it on the sides of the mess, therefore the result is the entire thing is treated, in effect, we consider as though that kever itself, as though the entire kever was the mess. So even the areas that don't contain the mess. So if there was no poseach tefach, if there was no space of a tefach above the mess, or if there were spaces of a tefach on the sides, then it would be different. Then the truma would be contained. If there was no poseach tefach, then it would be just directly above the mess and no place else. And if there were spaces of a tefach on the side, then the tumor would remain inside the kever, and it wouldn't spread over it. So there's a Gemara Tosfos brings from a Gemara in Brachas, for example, where one of the Tanoim, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, who was a Kohen, mentions that they used to sometimes walk or jump over Kvarim in order to go and see a Melech, where the idea is, the Gemara explains over there, since most Kvarim are constructed in such a way that you do have Poseach Tefach, you do have a Tefach between the mess and the roof of the kever, then therefore, Midaraisa, they're not Metameh, at least on a daraisa level, we can assume at least on a daraisa level, the tumma is contained within the kever, because not only you have that, but you also have spaces of a tefach elsewhere in the kever, and therefore that's enough for it not to be considered a kever sosum, and therefore a kohen who walks over it is not becoming tumma, at least on a daraisa level. This is, by the way, very negeya as far as the question of a kohen flying or driving over places where there are kvarim. We're going to talk about in tomorrow's Gemara, Beis Hashem. We're going to talk about the whole issue of oihel zoruk, of a moving oihel, which also factors into that. But one of the points is, if we say that most kvarim have, like the Gemara is saying over there in Brachas, if we say ach tefach and so forth, then maybe there's less of an issue with kohenim flying over them. On the other hand, they found practically speaking, that many times it's not so. First of all, over time, especially in Eretz Yisrael, they usually don't bury with coffins at all. They usually just bury in the ground, and eventually the ground subsides over there, and you don't necessarily have a Paseach Tefach inside the grave, in which case Bakasva or Bakasva Yodenis, in which case the Tumah goes straight up. And again, the plane being an Oihol Zoruk, being a moving Oihol, does not necessarily protect the Kohenim inside from becoming Tameh, so it becomes a real issue in Halacha. If we knew for a fact, as the Gemara mentions, they were in Brachas, with the kinds of Kvarim that they constructed in those days, where generally there is a Paseach Tefach, then maybe there'd be less of an issue with it. In Chutzlar, that's where they generally bury in an Oren, then maybe also there's less of an issue, because even if the ground subsides, you still have that space inside the Oren. Anyway, so that's Kever Sosum that the Gemara is mentioning, that the Braise is mentioning. That again, if you have the Pasuk says Oy Bakover, so in other words, there can be a case where the Kever, the whole Kever is considered as though it was one big mess, and therefore the Truma is going to extend even above it. Okay, so far all that is one Braise that we learn from that we're discussing a Pasuk that refers to that we said the beginning of the Pasuk, V'chol asher yigah al pnei hasodeh, refers not to touching, it refers to oihel because it says al pnei hasodeh, on the surface of the field. So therefore it implies, in other words, we're not just talking about touching, we're talking about overshadow. Now, continues Rish Lakish, V'ilu gabe negia. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to touching a mess or parts of a mess, then we have Omer Rav Yehuda Tanya. Then we have Rav Yehuda quotes another Braisa that discusses another pasuk in that connection. The pasuk said a couple of psukim later after the pasuk we just quoted. It says that you sprinkle parah adruma water, and it says va'ala negea ba'etzem over cholol over mace over cover, on a person who touched a bone or a cholol, a corpse, or over mace over cover. So you have four things mentioned. So again, this second braisa is going to be doubting them, and here it says negea, so we're talking about touching. So Tanya, so we learn a braisa v'chol hanegea, or actually the pasuk doesn't actually say the word v'chol, it's v'al hanegea, whatever, a person who touches ba'etzem oy b'cholol, so let's daushin, ba'etzem ze'etzem kisa'ura, the word etzem over here refers to a grain of bone, the piece of bone, the size of a grain of barley, so that's matame, it's not matame ba'oyhol, as we said before, but it is matame if a person touches or carries it, because this pasuk again is talking about touching, oy b'cholol ze'evra nechlo menachai ve'ein bo lahal sarucha. The word becholol, now this braisa says, refers to a limb that was removed, that was cut off from a living person, and there isn't enough flesh on it to regenerate. Oy b'mace ze'eira nechlom in a mess, and then when it continues, a mace doesn't necessarily mean a complete mace. It just means, again, a limb that was removed from a dead person, and again there are Tosfos brings a Tosfos and other Rishonim have a Girsa of the same thing, and there's not enough flesh on it to regenerate. And oiba mace, oiba cover, and then with the fourth thing that it says in the pasuk, oiba cover, a person touched a grave. So now the question is, if we said already that a grave is matame ba'oihol, why did the pasuk need to tell us matame mago v'masa? So Omer Rish Lakish zeh kever shelifnei hadibur. So Rish Lakish says this is referring to a kever from before the dibur. Now, what does before the dibur mean? Tosfos explains that it means a kever from before the times of Matan Torah. So now, like this, in other words, we have a machloikas elsewhere in Shas. We learned in Yevamos, it comes up here and there in Shas. There's a machloikas Reb Shimon and the Chachamim, whether the graves of Goyim are metame ba'oil. Everybody agrees that Goyim are metame b'mago v'masa. The question is, what about walking over their graves? Would that, or walking or being in the same room as a body of a Goy, is that metame? Reb Shimon holds no, the Chachamim hold yes. This is also negeya nowadays. You have the machlokas adayim azeh, whether that is the case, and that's negeya. For example, as far as a kohen being in a hospital where they have a morgue with goyish bodies, whether he's allowed to be there, so that would depend on this machlokas of Shimon and the Chacham. Anyway, the point is, Rish Lakish says that. And Tosfos points out this braisa necessarily would have to be appointed of Shimon. Even though Reb Shimon is saying that only Jewish bodies are metame ba'oihel, Goyish bodies are not, And he learns that from the fact that the Pasuk says over here the word Adam, and then there's the famous thing, Atam Kruyim Adam, only the Jewish people are called Adam. Nevertheless, though, the Shlokish is saying that even Reb Shimon would agree about people who lived before Matan Torah, even though before Matan Torah everybody was Goyim. Nevertheless, that distinction, that this that we're saying, Atam Kruyim Adam, that came in only at the time of Matan Torah. That's Tosfos's first explanation. Then Tosfos gives a second explanation that it means actually Shalifnei Adibur means even after Matan Torah, before the parasha of Tumas Nes was said. Now, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, we'll learn in Gittin, Be'ez Hashem, in a few months, that there were eight parashiyos that were told to Moshe on Rosh Chodesh Nissen, and one of them is the parasha of Par Adumah. So therefore, that was Rosh Chodesh Nissen. You know, we had in today's parasha, we had that was the day the Mishkan was set up. On that day, Hashem taught Moshe eight sections of the Torah, one of them being this one. So that means now you could have, there were Jews who passed away between Matan Torah and that following Rosh Chodesh Nissen. So the point is, the Rivah brings in Tosfos that this Braisa would mean that even those graves are also metamed. Like this, otherwise you would think that maybe it only means only after this parasha is given are they metame. So Rish Lakish wants you to know that Rish Lakish is telling you, the Braisa wants you to know that actually that even ones from before that, any graves of Jews from after Matan Torah are also metame. And then there's several other opinions. There's several other opinions of Rishonim on the subject of what this Lifnei Adibur means. And one thing that Tosfos and the Rosh bring that's relevant over here is there's a Gemara in Bava Basra that tells a story where the Banna was going and marking graves so that Kohenim don't walk over them. And the Gemara tells a story over there how he went to the Ma'aris Machpela and was marking it so Kohenim will know where they can walk and where they can't walk. The Pashtus, we have to understand. I mean, nowadays you have a building built over it, but I guess we have to understand that the Banna lived before that building was built. Anyway, the question is, if you're going to tell me, says Tosfos, that according to Reb Shimon, again, these graves of Goyim are not Matame V'Oihel, then why does he need to mark anything anyway? This is before Matan, all the people who are buried in Moses Machpelah passed away before Matan Torah. And so the Rivah explains, again, according to his Shitta, that it means that we mean only Kvarim from after Matan Torah, Matame, according to Reb Shimon, not ones from before it. However, since Reb Shimon is learning it from the word Adam, then therefore, Adam Arishan and the Avos are an exception. Adam Arishan, of course, himself is called Adam. Avraham is also called, there's a pasuk that mentions Adam Hagadol Ba'anokim, the great man among the giants. And the Medrash says that refers to Avraham Avinu. So they can be called Adam. They would be an exception to the rule. So Rish Lakish says Zekheber Shalifnei Adibur. So again, one possibility then is that Rabbanah is holding like Reb Shimon and saying that even according to Reb Shimon, there would be an exception. Another possibility, the Rosh says that Rabbanah would hold like the Chachamim, that it doesn't make a difference before or after the Dibur, according to them. You don't need this Drosha from the word Oibakov. Okay, so now that we have these two Braises, and really it's mainly the second Braise that Rish Lakish is going to bring us proof from, the first Braise really we're only mentioning in order to complete the whole subject. B'chlal, what you have is Seder Taharis, which is where these dinim of Tumas Nes are dealt with, does not have Gemara Bavli, with the exception, or Yerushalmi for that matter, with the exception of Masechta Nidah. So therefore, when the Gemara comes in other Masechtas to dealing with matters of Tumah V'Tahara, it wants to analyze the subject as fully as possible, because there's not going to be another place to do it necessarily. So therefore, that is why here in Masechta Nazir, we're going into this analysis. But really, as far as Rish Lakish's proof, all he needs really is the second Braisa that mentioned the cases of touching. So now, says Rish Lakish, Hai Eivim Ames Hechidami. So you're telling me in the second Braisa, you're saying that if there's an Eva Menam Nes, then Eva Nechlo Menam Nes, then you're saying that that's Matamib Mago Masa. So, says Rish Lakish, Hechidami, what's the scenario? Ede Ispe Etzim Kesaura, if there's a bone in it the size of a grain of barley, Hainu Hanegeh Be'etzim. Well, then the Pasuk already mentions a person touches an Etzim, and the same Braisa says that means Etzim Kesaura. So therefore, obviously, such an Eva would be Matami. Ela Delesbe Etzim Kesaura. obviously we have to be talking about. There's no bone the size of a grain of barley in it, because again, we're talking about it's an aver that came from a very tiny baby or something. And nevertheless, the Torah is still including it because it is a complete aver. So even though it's aver min ames, and even though it doesn't have, and even though it doesn't have kedei lahalos arucha, because the braisa didn't say anything about that, or even if it does, it explicitly said in by lahalos. And nevertheless, the braisa is saying that you're tummy if you touch it or carry it. Well, there you go, the Shlokish says. So all our Mishnah is telling us is that back on Mem Tesselman days is that if a Nazir is under an oihel with such an aver, then he won't be tummy and he won't have to shave, etc. But if he touches it or carries it, sure he will. Not like Rabbi Yechon. The answer is Amalach Rabbi Yechon. Well, Rabbi Yechon will tell you. As a matter of fact, after all, the Braisa didn't specify one way or the other whether there is lahalos bayarucha or not, or whether there, or rather, whether there's etzim kisa'ora or not. We could be talking about that there is etzim kisa'ora. Fine, you know what? You're right. The pasuk doesn't need to tell us that if a person touches it, he's tamei, because obviously we know that from the fact that if he touches a bone, so all the more so if he touches an aver that contains a bone. The chiddush would be that the pasuk is, you have a lot of times, you would say the pasuk is not needed to tell us that such an aver is that is matame if you touch it. It's telling us that it's matame if you carry it, which otherwise we wouldn't have known. After all, the pasuk says negea. So therefore, and in fact, the Rosh wonders, according to Rosh Lakish, how would we know that? Rosh Lakish agrees that if you carry without touching a bone the size of a grain of barley, you're going to be tamei. Where, in fact, does he know that from? Rabbi Yochanan is saying you're learning it from the drasha and this braisa. But if Rosh Lakish is using that drasha for a different purpose, then where does he know it from? Anyway, the point is though that Rabbi Yochanan is going to say that that yes, in fact, you're right. We're talking about an aver that does contain an etzim kisa'ora. The chiddush of the pasuk and the chiddush of the braisa, quoting the pasuk, is that it's matame b'masa, which otherwise you wouldn't have known. There's an interesting point that Rav Velvel Brisker makes. The Brisker Rav, he says that. Now, Bechlal, the Rambam explains in Hilchos Tumas Mes, how Bechlal do we know that a mess is Matame B'masa? We really don't have it anywhere in these psukim of Parashas Parah. It doesn't say, it never says anything about masa over there. It says that if you touch it, it says that if you're an oil. Where do we see anything about carrying? So the Rambam points out, you have a Kavachim, Madach and Nevela, which is not Matame B'oihel, nevertheless is Matame B'masa, and that the Pasuk says, it says explicitly, so how much more so a mess which is matama ba'oyla? Well, then the Brisker Rav points out that's only going to work for tumas that are ba'oyla. An etzim kisa'ora, the whole point is not matama ba'oyla. Therefore, that kavachomu is not going to work for that, and therefore we need a limud over here. That's what the Rosh is wondering. So, how would Rish Lakish learn that if he himself is saying that you're learning the braisa differently? But anyway, Rabbi Yechon is going to say the Braisa doesn't contradict me, because in fact the Braisa is telling us the concept of Tumas Masa as far as such an aver, which you wouldn't know otherwise, given that it is talking about where it has an etzim kisa'ora, but as just a bone by itself, it would be matame b'masa, but you wouldn't know that without the pasuk saying the word oy b'cholo, oy b'mes rather. So Rabbi Yechanan still says, I'm sticking to what I say, that if it doesn't have lahalo sarucha, if it doesn't have enough flesh to regenerate, and it doesn't have etzim kasarida, the fact that it's an aver is neither here nor there. It's not matama, even mamaga, or even mamasa. Okay. The Gemara continues. Now, we said in the Mishnah that all these tumas that we mentioned in the Mishnah about the Nazir, we said umazir b'shlishi uvashvi, we said he gets sprinkled with parah druma water on the third and seventh day, just like any regular tumah mess. V'soysa v'chola, and we said he forfeits all the days of his Nazirus, and he has to start all over again. Okay, we had earlier in the Masechta, we had the Machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer, where we had Rabbi Eliezer that says sometimes he only loses 30 days. But anyway, the point is, the Gemara is going to focus on the last line of the Mishnah, which is Ve'enei Maschil Limnos. He does not begin recounting his Nazirus. Ela ad sheyitar, until he becomes Tahar, or maybe as Korbanosim, and bring his Korbanos. So now the Gemara is going to analyze that line of the Mishnah. So So the question was, Hod Katani Ad She Yitar, when the Mishnah says that he doesn't start until he becomes Tahar, what do we mean, Ad She Yitar? Bashvi Koi, do we mean we're talking about on the seventh day? The seventh day is when he finishes the process of his Tumah. He gets sprinkled the second time, he toibles. Then on that day also is, so are we saying that, so Bashvi Koi, and the word Ad Sheyita means Ad Ovid, head of Shemesh. So he would have to wait until he has head of Shemesh. Actually, Tosfos and the Rosh do not have the words Ad Ovid, head of Shemesh. The Gemara is maybe entertaining the possibility he may not even need head of Shemesh. Even during the daytime on the seventh, he could already count that day as the first day of his new Nazirus, even before he brought his Korbanos, and even before he had head of Shemesh. The Girsa that we have in front of us would be that he'd have to have a head of Shemesh, and then he could begin even before he brings his Korbanos. And then you would say, Umani Rabbi Yezri, in which case, if you say that, then it would mean that our Mishnah would be like Rabbi Yezri. Now, we had earlier in the Masechta, a three or four way machloikas about when the Nazir becomes Tomei, and then he's Tahar and wants to restart his Nazirus. At what point can he restart? We had on Yud Ches Amud Beis. So we had Rabbi Eliezer saying that he can start right away. The Chachamim say he has to wait until he brings at least his Chatos. We had Rebbe saying he doesn't have to wait till he brings his Korbanos, but he does have to wait until the actual eighth day, until he's able to bring his Korbanos, because he can't bring them at night. So would our Mishnah be implying that even before head of Shemesh, or according to the Mephorish's Girsa, and the Girsa that we have in front of us is after head of Shemesh, but he hasn't brought his Korbanos yet? In that case, it would be, but even in other words, by night, and then therefore our Mishnah would be like Rabbi Eliezer. So the Mishnah, in other words, when our Mishnah on Memtesima Bay said, Ad Sheyitar, when it says he can't start until he becomes Tahar, means he becomes Tahar, then he can already start his Nazirus over, and then maybe his Korbanos, and then he has to bring his Korbanos on the eighth day. But that day would already be the second day of his new Nazirus. So is it that way? Or maybe the Mishnah is referring to the eighth day. So maybe the word Ad Sheyitar means until he actually brings his Korbanos. So maybe the Mishnah says until he becomes Tahar, and the full process of him becoming Tahar includes bringing his Korbanos. Umani Rabbanan. And in that case, our Mishnah would be like a Chachamim, that he has to actually wait until he brings his Korbanos, and until then he can't restart. So the Gemara says, The Rosh seems to have a slightly different girsa, where he says that it would be Rebbe, not Rabbanan, but it would be Rebbe who says that he doesn't have to wait till he actually brings the Korbanos, just until the eighth day comes, and he could bring the Korbanos, because he could conceivably bring them first thing in the morning. So the Gemara says Toshma. Well, let's prove from the fact that the next Mishnah continues, Midkotani Sefer, because the Sefer, which is the following Mishnah that we're now going to have here at the bottom of the Amud, says that in the cases, you have the various cases it's going to list where Nazir became Tomei with things that don't cause him to forfeit his Nazirus up until now. So we say he does have to suspend his Nazirus for the 7 days that it takes for him to become Tahar. But the expression is, that he begins recounting, that he right away begins recounting, implying right away on the seventh day. Therefore, in the Reisha, it has to be that the word Ad Sheyitar means not only he becomes Tahar, but he actually brings his Korbanos, and Umani Rabbanan he, and therefore the Mishnah would be like a Chachamim, the Ami Nazirus Tara Ad Shemini Lechaila. They say that the new Nazirus Tara cannot begin until the eighth day, unlike Rabbi Eliezer, who said that could conceivably begin on the seventh day. So that would be the difference. In other words, when the Nazir became Tomei with one of the 12 Tumas mentioned in the Mishnah on Memtes Amud Beis, then he would have to wait until the eighth day. So what happens is he gets sprinkled with Parah Adumah water on the third day. He gets sprinkled again on the seventh day. That same day, the seventh day, he goes to the Mikveh. That night, he has head of Shemesh. The next day, the eighth day, he brings his Korbanos Tumah, the two birds and the sheep. And then once he's done that, then he can start his Nezirus Tahara. Then that day becomes the first day of his new Nezirus. Whereas according to Rabbi Eliezer, again, we were saying that he could have already started his Nezirus the day before. And then on the other hand, the Mishnah is going to say now, the following Mishnah is going to say that when he's Tomei with one of the Tumas that a Nazir does not have to shave for, then in fact, even the Chachamim will agree that he can restart his Nazirus on the seventh day because there's no Kobonus for him to bring. So now the Mishnah continues. Avol, however, let's have a bunch of cases where even though the person becomes Tomei, he does not have to shave and bring his Kobonus and start all over. So Avol HaSchochos, however, schochos, which is branches of trees that overshadow the ground. So now you have a scenario that you have, there's these branches that hang over the ground. There's known to be tumah under one of those branches, but you don't know which one. So now if the nazir walks under one of the branches, so then you have a suffix, whether he's tumah, but because it's only a suffix, then therefore, because it's only a suffix, then he wouldn't shave and so forth. We're going to learn actually in the next perek that there's a difference between Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRabim when it comes to Safek Tumah. There's a concept that Safek Tumah, Rishus HaYochid, is considered Tumah in the Daraisa, only Rishus HaRabim would it be Tahor. So what we're talking about over here, Tosfos explains that we're talking about, Tosfos on Amud Beis explains that we're talking about over here, this is a case where it would be in Rishus HaRabim, and it would actually be Tahor in the Daraisa, but Midrabbanan, we would say that he's Tomei, but the Rabbanan can't tell him to shave and bring his Kobonus. They can't tell him to shave because if he's a man, he's not allowed to shave his payas, which would be part of the process of shaving for a Nazir. And in any case, man or woman, he can't bring Kobonus because the Chum can't tell you to bring Chulin into the Azara. Tosfos also mentions on Amud Beis that we're talking about over here that none of the branches are a tefach wide. If any of the branches were a tefach wide, then you would have a different issue because then they can be considered an oyol min haTorah. There are different Rishonim who discuss the ins and outs of that. Not all of the Rishonim agree to that. And the point about it not being a tefach wide. So in fact, there are some of the Rishonim who learn that maybe even we're talking about the branches are a tefach wide. But again, the point is there's a suffix which one it was under. Tosfos themselves in some other places mentions a possibility also we could be talking about, for example, where the branches are, if you look horizontally from underneath, they're one next to the other. But if you were to look at them from the side, you would see they're at different heights. So therefore, not necessarily on a Daraisa level do they combine together to make as if they were one roof. And there are Rishonim who talk about the idea that the question could also be how close they are together. Conceivably, for example, if you smeared a layer of plaster over them, would it stand? Are the branches close enough together that plaster would stay in place, or would it just fall down because the branches are too far apart? That's another consideration when then they would be metame de rabbanon. And there's different other points that Amban makes a point that branches, after all, they all begin from the same tree and then they spread out. So therefore, there's a reason maybe to consider them more tame than otherwise. In any case, we're saying over here, it's not a strong enough tumor for a nazir to shave for. Next, vaprois, and then you have stones that stick out of a wall. Similar idea. You have stones that stick out of a wall. There's one of them that's known to have tumor underneath it, but again, you don't know which one. So again, if a nazir walks underneath them, then he may be tamei, at least rabbanon, but he's not going to be shaving and bringing his korbanos. Tosfos actually brings from a Gemara in Masechta Nida that seems to imply that if he were to walk under all the stones, then he would be tamei, because after all, inevitably, then it means he went under the tumah. In any case, let's say he went only on the summit. Next, Ubesa Pras. The next one is a Besa Pras, which is discussed in a number of places in Shas. This is an area of a field where there's a grave that was plowed up. So a person plowed up a field that had a grave in it. Now, Midaraisa, we're not really concerned. Midaraisa, we don't assume the plow blade digs that deeply into the earth to even disturb the grave. And even if it does, it's not very likely to. It's a scattered bones all over the place. But Midrabanan, we're concerned about that. And we say for 100 amma in each direction, we have to be concerned that there may be fragments of bone in the field. And again, those fragments of bone, as we learned before, we don't assume there's going to be pieces that are large enough to be metame ba'oyo, but they may be metame mago masa. So therefore, a person walks through that field and he may touch them with his feet. As he walks, then he may be tummy. But again, if a nozir walks through such a place, we're not going to make him shave and bring his korbanos, because again, it's only dirabah. Next, the Eretz Amim, also the lands of the Goyim, meaning all the lands outside Eretz Yisrael. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to begin talking about that on Omer Beis, what the nature of that Tuma is. V'ha-goylol v'ha-doifik, also a goylol doifik of a kever. Now Rashi, in a number of places in Shas, explains that the goylol is the covering, is the lid of the coffin, and the doifik would be the side pieces of the coffin. Tosfos here and a number of other places in Chas argues with that. We learned before, al pnei asod is a girl of a doifik, implying that they have to be something exposed, whereas these things, the cover and the lid and the sides of the coffin are buried in the ground. So rather, Tosfos here and in some other places explains that girl means the matseva, means the gravestone over the grave. In particular, it's the kind of gravestone that you often find in Eretz Yisrael and in some places in the Chutz La'aretz, where it runs the full length of the kever, the typical gravestones that we're familiar with in Chutz La'aretz. It's only a headstone. Here we're talking about one that runs the full length of the kever. And the doifik then would be the side pieces that hold it up, the footstones or whatever you call them.
It's a kisui
ha'orim. That's what Rashi explains. I mean, kisui ha'orim means the lid of the orim. So according to Rashi, the girl and doifik would be buried in the ground. Yeah, well, they would be buried in an orin in the ground. So Rashi learns that the girdle and doifik are parts of the orin. Tosfos learns that they are parts of the matseva. There is actually the word girdle literally means rolling, and there are people who explain. You find we're going to have towards the end of our masechta, we're going to talk about the system that they used to bury in those days. They used to often bury people in niches in walls, and then they would have sort of a stone that they would roll in place to cover the opening of it. So that would be the word golo, means rolling. So that would be that stone that's rolled in place over there. And then the doifik would be like pieces of stones that you put underneath it to chuck it so that it doesn't roll over, like you put chucks under a wheel when you're changing a tire or something, so it doesn't roll away. So that would be another possibility of golo and doifik. Anyway, again, a nozir touches a goyel of doifik, he will become tamei, but not to the extent where he's going to have to shave and bring his korbanos. Because even though we said before, those are included in tumas mes, they're not tumas directly from the mes. It's more indirect, and therefore, again, since the pasuk says v'chiyomus meis olav, if a mes dies in his presence, so that implies there's only tumas directly from the mes, not these indirect kind of tumas. Next. Urvius dam. The next thing is a urvius of blood. So we learned in the last Mishnah and in the Gemara in some detail that a urvius of blood is enough to be matame a person, even ba'oil, but it's not enough to make a nozir shave. Again, we said there's halacha l'moshe b'Sinai that when it comes to a nozir, certain shiurim have to be larger in order for him to have to shave. In fact, Tosfos says, you don't really need to say revius. Really, it's anything less than a half a lug. We said in the previous Mishnah, a half a lug, so anything less than that is not going to make him shave. But we're using the word revius dam because that's the standard terminology that we use as far as Tumas Nes, where revius of blood is enough to make a person tummy. Next, v'oihel, and we learned before in the Gemara, by the way, that the reason why the Mishnah is mentioning revius dam, even though before it mentioned a half a lug of blood, and we would infer from that, obviously, that anything less than a half a lug, a nozir doesn't shave, is because we're going to have a Mishnah later on in the Perek, at the end of the Perek, in Vov Amud Beis, where Rabbi Akiva is going to try to learn that revius dam is matameh nozir, and makes him shave, and Rabbi Eliezer is going to tell him no, so therefore our Mishnah is telling us revius dam to tell us not like Rabbi Akiva. Next, v'oihel. The roiva atzamos. The next thing is an oihel and a quarter kav of bones. So now there are two ways of understanding that phrase. The Bar Tanura on the Mishnah explains, and Tosfos Yom Tov explains, following him explains that it means that it's one thing, an oihel over a roiva atzamos. So in other words, if the nazir is in a tent or a building or whatever, together with a roiva atzamos, again, even though he's going to be tomei, he's not going to be shaving and bringing his korbanos, because again, it's not a strong, and it's not the kind of tumah. It's one of those things, halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, that a nazir does not shave over there. Then you have the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos understands it a little differently. He says we're talking about two things, an oihel of atzomis, as well as if he touches a roiv atzomis. Anyway, also, the kelim anogim b'mes, also if the nozer touches kelim that previously touched a dead body. So we said before, cherev hareu kachol, also the kelim themselves. And again, we talked about before, do we mean only metal kelim, or do we mean appointed of Yitzchak Misimpont? We mean all kelim. Anyway, so those touch a mess. So again, a person touches them, he becomes tamei. So, but again, since it says v'chiyomus meis olav, so it has to be a direct tumah from a mess, and not the kelim anogim a mess, which is not a direct tumah from the mess. Also, uvi meis sofrei uvi meis gomrei. Now let's move away from tumas mess and talk about the tumah of a mitzvah. Now we know mitzvah goes through many stages of his tumah. You have, and here the Gemara is actually going, the Mishnah is actually mentioning them out of order. But the way it works with a Mitzorda is, we know that a Mitzorda first goes to the Kohen. Sometimes the Kohen declares him a Mitzorda Mukhlat right away and tells him you have to leave the Machne and then do all the things that it says in the Pasuk. Sometimes you have, as we know, there can be 1 or 2 weeks where the Kohen keeps him in quarantine to see what the situation is, to see does it develop 2 hairs or a Michya, or does it grow larger, etc. Anyway. So once the tzaras goes away, then you have the procedure at the beginning of Parshas Metzorah involving the water and the 2 birds and the eight eres and ezev and so forth. After that, the Metzorah starts, he shaves and starts counting 7 days before he then shaves again and brings his karbanos. So you may suffer are the days that he's counting those 7 days. Yemei Gomrei would be the days when he's a confirmed Mitzorah and has to be outside the city. So those days, as the Mishnah is going to go on to explain, they don't count towards his Nazirus. They don't make him lose his Nazirus, but they don't count towards the days of his Nazirus. So in other words, he had become a Nazir, let's say, for 30 days, a regular Stam Nazirus Shloshim Yom. 20 days into his Nazirus, he became a Mitzorah. Now, let's say, so forget about the quarantine days or whatever. Let's say he became a Mitzorah Mukhlat right away. So he'll be outside the Machna, let's say he's like Miriam. He's outside the Machna for a week. Then after that, they do the thing with the 2 birds and so. Then after that, he counts another 7 days. All of those days do not count to him. During those days, his Nazirus is suspended. After that, after the 7 days of counting, when he's ready to bring his korbanos, then he can start, then he can also continue his Nazirus and do the last 10 days of his Nazirus. So during that time, he can't shave, he still can't drink wine, he still can't do any of the things of a Nazir, but they don't count towards his days of Nazirus. So for all these things, and Tosfos points out, by the way, why it needs to mention you may suffer and you may gomer. You could think that otherwise, you would think, if it only said Yemei Sofrei, the Yemei Gomrei, when he's actually outside the city and has a very severe degree of tumah, you would think maybe those do make him lose his days of Nazirus till now. And if it only mentioned Gomrei, Fakert, you would say maybe the days of Sofrei do count. Anyway, so the Mishnah continues, Al Elu Eina Nozim Galeach. So for all of these that we mentioned in the Mishnah, the Nazir does not shave his hair. Now, in the case of a Mitzorah, he's shaving anyway, because, of course, the Mitzorah has to shave, but we mean, in other words, he's not shaving as a Nazir Tomei and doing all that procedure. However, when it was with any of the Tumas mess that we were talking about, he does need to be sprinkled with Parah Adumah water on the 3rd and 7th day. Obviously, again, that doesn't apply to the Mitzorah. Tosfos also points out that it wouldn't be talking about the kalim anogim b'mes. It wouldn't be talking about the kalim that touched a mess, because Tosfos explains that here we're talking about wooden kalim. So according to Rabbi Yitzchak Misimpont, maybe, because according to him, cherev hareu kacholol counts for wooden kalim as well. But according to the other Rishonim, who hold that it applies only to metal kalim, then according to them, he obviously is not being sprinkled the parad in the water. So what we mean is the rest of the things we mentioned in the Mishnah, the schochos, trois, the revius dam, and so on and so forth. So he'd be sprinkled with
parah. How can he shave being a mitzvah while being a nazir at the same time? Why he doesn't have to wait until he's not a nazir anymore?
So the basic idea is, and we're going to talk about it in great detail later on in the Masechta, in the last Perek in particular, is because basically the Rambam explains it, during the time that he is a Metzora, since his Nazirus is suspended, then therefore the Isser of a Nazir shaving his hair is also temporarily suspended. Therefore, he's able to shave for his Nazirus and then go back to continuing his, and to shave for his Tzaras rather, and then go back to shaving for his Nazirus, so go back to finish counting his Nazirus and shave for it. I should say, actually, it's in the next parak. Actually, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that whole concept. We're going to talk about that particularly beginning on Testament days. We're going to have cases involving that.
It's suspended to the point where
to the
he
point
can shave.
Where he's yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, continuing the Mishnah. However, in all these cases, the Mishnah, he does not forfeit the days that he counted until now for his Nazirus. Now, they don't count towards his Nazirus, but he doesn't forfeit the days. Tosfos brings that Rashi wondered, or on the side over here, it says over here, a Girsa, that it's supposed to be that the Rash, which is Rabbeinu Shimshon, wonders why indeed, if he doesn't touch Kalim, if he touches Kalim on Nogim Mames, then why indeed, he's only Tomei, Tumas Erev, he's only Tomei for one day, why shouldn't that day count towards his Nazirus? Anyway, but that's what it is. We're saying that they don't count towards the Nazirus, but he doesn't forfeit the days until now. So he continues counting his Nazirus as soon as he becomes Toher from Tumas Mess. And again, as we looked before, in other words, he doesn't have to wait till he brings his Korbanos, because there's no Korbanos for him to bring. In the case of a Metzora, that's a special case, and we're going to discuss that in the Gemara later. We talked about that earlier in the Masechta as well, that a Metzora is a special case because he has Korbanos to bring. Anyway, the korban ain't loy. In most of these cases, there's no korban, or actually in all these cases, there's no korban of a nazir tamei, because even in the case of a tzora, he has korbanos, but the korbanos, of course, are not korbanos for nazirus, they're korbanos for tzoras. Continues the Mishnah, be'emes amru, in truth they said, and we have a general rule that the Gemara says that whenever it introduces a halacha with the words be'emes amru, means halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that Yemei Hazov Hazov, that the days of a Zov or a Zava, so suppose that a Nazir, suppose a person became a Nazir and then in the middle became a Zov or a woman became a Zava, the Yemei Hasgele Shomatsoda, and also the days of quarantine of a Matsoda, Hareel Oilamai, those actually count towards his Nazirus. So, unlike, in other words, to continue our scenario before with the Nazir. So, let's say, for example, he took on Nazirus for 30 days. And let's say 5 days after he became a Nazir, he developed Tzaras. So now we're not certain whether it's Tzaras. So the Kohen quarantines him for a week, and then he checks him on the seventh day. So let's say at that point he becomes a Metzora Muchlat. He becomes a confirmed Metzora. So now what happens is those first 7 days that he was quarantined do count towards his Nazirus. So far he's got 12 days of Nazirus. He's got 18 days to go. Now what happens is because he became a confirmed Metzora, now his Nazirus is suspended. So it's suspended for however long the Tzaras stays on him. Again, let's say it was like Miriam 1 week or however long it could be, doesn't really matter. It's also suspended for the 7 days that he counts after the beginning of his Tara and his first shaving. Then eventually he brings his Korbanos for the Tzaras, and then he resumes and does the remaining 18 days of his Nazirus, let's say. But again, the point is that the days when he was quarantined, which was 7 days, or even could be 2 weeks, it could be 13 days, those actually count towards the Nazirus, and he doesn't have to, unlike the other ones which don't count, which don't make him lose the days until now, but they don't count either, these days actually count. And the same with him, the days of a Zav or a Zava, so as a person becomes a Zav, he has to count 7 clean days. A woman becomes a Zava, a Zavag Dola, she has to count also 7 clean days. Those days actually count towards their Nazirus. So now their time of the end of their Nazirus is getting closer and closer. They haven't lost those days. Tosfos actually explains that when we say Yemei Hesgeroi would actually mean that only when the Yimei Hesgeroi was followed by eventually that he became Tohar. Because after all, you could have in the quarantining process, you could have he's locked up for 7 days or for 13 days. And then the Kohen checks him. And sure enough, it finds that there's no simonim to confirm that it's saras. It didn't spread, it didn't develop white hair, it dulled in color or whatever. So then Tosfos learns that would be when it counts towards Nazirus. But on the other hand, Tosfos is implying that if in fact he ends up after the quarantine, he becomes a Matsoda Mukhlat, then Tosfos learns that not those days would not count towards his Nazirus. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. The Elohim has schochus. Now, the first two things we said in the Mishnah are schochus and prayers. So what's the definition of schochus? Elon hames chama'oretz, a tree that overhangs the ground. And again, you have a mess buried under one of the branches, or a kazais from a mess under one of the branches, and you don't know which one. And therefore, so again, you have this matter of suffix. And even though it's suffix tumah b'shus rabim, nevertheless, midirabbanan was still tumah. But in the case, so in the case of the Nazir, we will say Misafik is Tomei, but he's not going to bring his coat, he's not going to shave and bring his coat on us. And again, we have the whole discussion before whether we're talking about that the branches are a tefach wide, aren't a tefach wide, are they neck, how close are they to each other horizontally, etc., etc. Okay, oprois, and what's the definition of oprois? Is hayotzis min hageder, is stones that stick out of a wall. Same idea. In other words, you have stones that stick out of a wall, and there's known to be a mess under one of them, but you don't know which one. Okay. The next thing in the Mishnah we said was ve'eretz ha'am. We said the lands of the nation, the lands outside Eretz Yisrael. So those are matami. So now let's figure out why. Iboilu. So the question is, eretz ha'amim, Mishum Avira Gozuala, is what is the reason why the Chachamim made the Gzera that if a person goes into Eretz Amim, they become Tomei? Is it even just the airspace of Eretz Amim is Tomei? Now, Lamaskana, it is actually like that. The Gemara is going to end up concluding, we are going to end up concluding that it is in fact Mishum Avira. The Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, the idea is that the lands outside Eretz Yisrael, even though air is Tomei or Moli Klippus. But here, you know, we're dealing with on the practical level of Halacha, is that in fact the reason? And the idea would be, now the point would be, in other words, even then, if a person goes into Eretz Amim in a closed box or in a coach or something, or you know, nowadays in a car or an airplane or whatever, then they would still be Tomei. Or Tosfos says, let's say, for example, they walked over Eretz Amim in a bridge or something. So maybe, in other words, the idea would be the Chachamim wanted to discourage people from leaving Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz, and therefore they would say that anybody who goes to Eretz Amim is Tomei. Again, you know, for us nowadays, we wouldn't realize that there's much to it. Okay, so I become Tomei, big deal, but he's Tomei nowadays anyway. In those times where it meant that now you'd have to go find a person to sprinkle parah adumah water on you. And until then, if you're a Kohen, you can't eat truma and kodshim. Or if you're a Kohen, you can't eat truma. And if you're Yisrael, you can't eat kodshim or maiser sheni or what have you, then it would be a hardship. So therefore that would discourage people from leaving Eretz Yisrael. So is that the idea?
Even though we're all tummy, are you saying that the tumor of Eretz Amim is the same or as the present tumor of Eretz Yisrael? I mean, that sounds very, very surprising.
Well, no. So there is, we're all going to talk about at the very end, almost at the very end of the Masechta, we're going to talk about the Chachamim used every possible excuse to declare that Eretz Yisrael is not tummy. Even though the reasons that we're going to mention now about Eretz Amim conceivably could apply in Eretz Yisrael as well, nevertheless, the Chachamim did not want to declare Eretz Yisrael Tomei where not necessary. If we know that there's an area that has Tumah in it, then it's different. But so the answer is the Tumah of Eretz Amim exists nowadays also. Practically speaking, it's not necessarily Negea much because everybody nowadays is Tomei Mess anyhow. Even a Koyan who lives in Eretz Yisrael, Bepashtos, at some point in his life, has been in an area where there are kvarim, he's been in a hospital, he's been with a morgue, or whatever, and therefore, practically speaking, there's not necessarily the issue of going into Eretz Amim, but the concept, the trauma of Eretz Amim still exists, yeah. Anyway.
No, I understand it exists, but you're saying the degree of tumor is the same at this point.
Well, no, it's not that the degree of tumor is the same. What we're saying is, practically speaking, even everybody who lives in Eretz Yisrael is Bechezkos Tomei. But there's a difference that the Eretz Yisrael itself, the land of Eretz Yisrael itself, has a chazaka being tahor unless you know otherwise. Whereas the lands of Eretz Amim have because of this Zera Drabanan are considered tahor. Yeah.
So when you add the tumah of the land and the tumah of the people, you still get less tumah than outside Eretz Yisrael, apparently.
Okay. Fine. So that's how it is. Yeah. Okay. But again, as far as having practical implications, la halacha, it doesn't necessarily nowadays right. Because we're all becheskas tamei mason. Okay.
Right.
Anyway, oydilma mishum gusha gozru aleha, or maybe the gzera of eretz amim is because of the clods of dirt, which would mean, in other words, so only if a person is touching it or carrying it or being in an oihel with it or being an oihel himself over it, then he would be metame. But for example, if he went in there in a shita table or migdal, if he went in there inside a box or something, or like Tosfos says, over a bridge or something, he wouldn't necessarily become tame. Now, what would be the reason mishum gusha? So Tosfos points out a couple of possibilities. First of all, you have, for example, the people who died in the mob. Their remains are all, it can be all over the place in Chutz Laaretz. Yeah, the Gemara mentions in Zvachim an opinion that that the reins of the Mabul didn't land in Eretz Yisrael, and even according to the opinion that they did, again, as it says at the end of the Masechta, the Chachamim tried to use every excuse to not declare Eretz Yisrael Tamei. But Chutz Laaretz, you don't have that, so that would be one point. You have Meisei Mabul, you have the dead of the Mabul over there that are embedded in the earth all over the place. There's also the point that there are Jews who were killed in Chutz Laaretz, so therefore and their bodies might be anywhere. And there's also other Rishonim point out that there are also the Goyim themselves bury indiscriminately. They don't always necessarily bury in actual cemeteries or whatever, and therefore you might have bodies of Goyim buried there. So again, you may have the same problem. Again, if you go like the Chachamim against Reb Shimon, that even Kivrei Goyim Amatame Ba'oihel, like we talk about on Amun Aleph, then you would have a problem. According to Reb Shimon, maybe you wouldn't have a problem because according to him, Goyish bodies are not Matame Ba'oihel. Anyway, so could we say that the problem with the land of Chutz Laaretz is the actual clods of dirt which may contain human remains in them? In fact, Tosfos discusses in some detail over here, would a person in fact be Tomei if he's in an Oihel over it? There's a Mishnah in Oholos that lists Eretz Amim and Beis HaPras as things that are not Matame B'Oihel. So Tosfos talks about that there you're talking about if you took a clod of dirt from Eretz Amim and brought it to Eretz Yisrael, then that would be different. Then it's not Matame B'Oihel. Here we're talking about if you walk into Eretz Amim, if you're walking into Eretz Amim or something, so then maybe you'd become Tomei from Tumas Oihel. Then Tosfos says also maybe there's a difference. There were different Gzeiros that the Chachamim made, this point, this thing about Eretz Amim, the Gemara mentions in Shabbos had different stages in it. Anyway. So that's the question. Is it because of the Avir or because of the Gush? So the Gemara says, Toshma. Well, let's prove from our Mishnah. We said, Umazib Ashlishi Ubashvi. We said in all those cases, and the Gemara is assuming at this point that the Mazib Ashlishi Ubashvi, that it said that a person is sprinkled with paradromal water, would apply to all of the Tumas from Mess that we're talking about, that were mentioned in the Mishnah, including the Eretz Amin. So, Now, if you're going to tell me that the problem is of Eretz Amim is that even the airspace itself is Tomei, so even a person goes in there in a box or over a bridge or whatever, Hazal Amali, then why would he need Paradromo? Why would he need Paradromo sprinkling? After all, that only applies to Tumas Mes. Here you're talking about that on the face of it, there's no problem of Tumas Mes. There's a reason, because the Chachamim wanted to discourage people from going outside Eretz Yisrael. So why should that require sprinkling? El Alav Mishum Gusha. So doesn't that demonstrate, therefore, that the problem is because of the actual clods of dirt, that those may have mason in them, whether mason marble or whether indiscriminate burials by Goyim or whatever who are there. And therefore, the Mishnah is telling us that's why the person has to be sprinkled with paradum water. But nevertheless, we're saying since it's only a gzeira derabbanan midaraisi, you don't have to be concerned that any particular clod of dirt has mason in it. Therefore, the nazir doesn't shave, etc. So, okay. So the Gemara continues, loy, not necessarily is that a valid counterproof. La'olam ein malach mishum avira. In fact, you could say that the Mishnah is telling you that the person is tamei because of the airspace. The Chachamim wanted to discourage people, in particular Koyanim, from leaving out Israel. V'chikatoni asha'ara. You know what? When the Mishnah mentions about being sprinkled with paradrum water, it refers to the other tumas that it mentioned in the Mishnah. So in other words, again, we had a bunch of tumas mentioned in the Mishnah, schochos, pra'os, beis ha'pras, etc., etc. So you could say, when it says that is not referring to every single thing in the Mishnah, it's referring to some of them. So it's not necessarily referring to Eretz Ha'amim. Maybe a person goes into Eretz Ha'amim. In fact, they don't need to be sprinkled with Torah, with paradrum water. And the Gemara says, Hochi Nami Mistabra. In fact, it's logical to understand that way, that the Mishnah is not necessarily meant saying that all of the tumas that have to do with a mess in our Mishnah require Hazar. Now, obviously, the ones with a Mitzvah don't, but the Gemara is not bothering with those because there it's fairly obvious. Nobody would think that those have to do with Hazar. But even within the tumas mess, we can say there's at least one other one that does not require Hazar, namely, Mitkotoni V'Kelem Anogim Mess. Because the Mishnah also mentioned Kalim that touched a mess. Now you have to ask, Hani Kalim Bnei Hazar? Now, Hani Kalim Bnei Hazar? Are these Kalim the kinds of things that would require a person to be sprinkled with paradrum water? We're not necessarily talking about metal Kalim. We're talking about what are called in halacha clay shetef, Kalim that can be toivled. For example, wooden Kalim. So they're only an avatuma. They're not an aviavosa tuma. If a person touches them, he only becomes tomei tumas erev. He only needs to go to the mikveh and have head of shemesh. Obviously, there's no sprinkle in the paradum of water from it. Ela shmamina. So doesn't that prove asha'ara? That again, you can say that the list in the Mishnah, when it says maza b'shlishi b'shvi, doesn't refer to every single thing in the Mishnah, only some of them. So here's where you have the whole discussion about, in fact, what kinds of kalim. We said before, cherev harei ukecholo, the concept that kalim that touch a mess are considered like the mess. To what kind of kalim are we talking about? So Tosfos first starts saying, Rabbeinu Tam says that it necessarily the Gemara is assuming we can't be talking about metal kalim precisely because, in fact, Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam, metal kalim, we're definitely cherev harei kacholol applies to those. Everybody agrees to that. They would even be kacholol to the extent where they would actually be metame ba'oyah. And not only ba'oyhol, but they'd be matame whether a person touches them or is under an oyhol for them. So now Tosfos brings that Rabbeinu Chaim Koyen, one of the Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam, who himself, obviously, you can tell by his name, was a Koyen. So he said to Rabbeinu Tam, that creates a problem for me and for other Koyenim like me. And he quotes the pasuk, Ezeb Bayis Asher Tivnuli. What kind of house would you build for me? In other words, the context of the pasuk obviously means something else entirely. Hashem is saying, no house can contain me. But Rabbi Chaim Koyen says, Rabbeinu Tam, if you're going to tell me that Cherev Hareu Kecholo means that any keli, that any metal keli that became tome tumas mes is metame a person, even ba'oihel, then there's almost no house that a koyin would be able to ever go into or to live in. Because if you're telling me, Rabbeinu Tam, that any metal keli, we would say cherev harei kacholo, to the extent where even a nozit would have to shave because of that. And because of that, Rabbeinu Tam says necessarily, therefore, all Gemara knows that it has to be talking about wooden kelim. Well, then, in that case, any house is going to have nails in it, and the nails at one point were in an oil a mess. Either the carpenter who built them at one point may have had a mess in his house, or at some point a mess may have died in this house or whatever, and forever after it's going to be tamei. So are you going to tell me then that a koyan can't live in almost any house? So he goes on to bring another proof as well that not. So therefore, Tosfos says that no. So when we say cherev harei kacholol, we don't mean to the extent that it would actually be metame ba'oihel. All it means is, in other words, so you actually have a number of different opinions among the Rishonim about all of this, about this whole cherev harei kacholol business. If we say, so first of all, you have the opinion, we said before, you have the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak Misimpont, who says that that it applies even to wooden kalim. So according to him, you'd have to understand our Gemara even further. How could you have our Gemara then, which is saying that that if a person touches kalim on Noigim Mes, that he's not tamei for 7 days, according to Rabbi Yitzchak Misimpont, he should be, because according to him, Cherev Harei Kacholol would apply even to that. But Tosfos themselves goes on to discuss that different possibilities that in fact we wouldn't say that even if we say cherev hareu kacholol, it doesn't mean to go so far as that a nozer would shave for it. Therefore, our Gemara does not have to be referring only to wooden kalim. It could be referring even to metal kalim, and we would still say that even though a metal kalim is considered avi avos ha-tuma, it does make a person tame. It does make him have to be sprinkled with parah adam water, etc., but not to the extent where a nozer will have to shave for it. And then there are different other opinions among Rishonim, including the idea that for example, that Ramban holds that even we are talking about metal kalim, fine, but it's only metamib magov masa, it's not metamib ba'oihel at all. And the Rambam says even more. The Rambam says that it's not even metamib the masa, it's only metamib the maga. And then you have different other possibilities. Gilin Ashas brings over here something from the Baal Amor, who says that even though a person touches the sword or whatever keli, he's going to become tamei, but he doesn't end up needing hazah. He is tamei for 7 days, but he doesn't require hazah. It's a unique shita of the Baal Amor. And there's many different other opinions among the Rishonim about the ins and outs of that. And that's also negeya, therefore, as far as a koyin, what kinds of tumah is a koyin allowed and not allowed. It would mean, in other words, then that it would mean, for example, sort of in Chaim Cohen's point about nails in a house, for example, according to most of Rishonim, wouldn't be an issue because, in fact, even though they are metame, if you touch them, they're not necessarily metame if you're under an oil with them. So the Gemara says that we can say that you see that there are things in the Mishnah, kalim anogim mes, where in fact, for whatever reason, no hazah is necessary, whether we're talking about wooden kalim, whether we're talking even about metal kalim, and those don't require. So you see that not every single thing mentioned in the Mishnah requires hazah. Therefore, you can just as well say, as far as the Eretz Amim, that maybe it doesn't require hazah either, but you could in fact say that nevertheless, but you could say that the Tumah of Eretz Amim is based on Avir, is based on being in the airspace of it, rather than just because of touching the dirt of it. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with analyzing this point further about what the nature of the Tumah of Eretz Amim is, and we're going to talk about this business of Oihel Zoruk and how it's relevant as far as Koyanim flying in planes. Best Hashem.
When you travel from Eretz Amim to Eretz Israel, do you bring this Tumah with you?
Well, you yourself remain Tame until you get sprinkled. But no, the Tumah doesn't come with you in the sense you're not Matame Eretz Yisrael. A person can be Matame Kalim, which is to a certain extent. If the person is an Ava Tumah, then he can be Matame Kalim that he touches, but he's not going to be Matame the dirt, the ground that he walks on.
So if he brings Eretz Amim into Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't Matame Eretz Yisrael?
So if he brings dirt from Eretz Amim in, then that's what we said before. Tosfos mentions that if he brings in dirt from Eretz Amim, that dirt will become Tomei. That dirt will be Tomei, and anything it touches will become Tomei, but not by Tumas Oil. Actually, the Mishnah in Aulis mentions you need a minimum amount of dirt for that to be an issue. You need Kechoisem Amar Tzofin. You need the amount of dirt that would be needed to seal that they used in those times as a seal or a stamp on certain kinds of packages. Less than that, then the Chacham weren't Gozer Tumah on it. But yeah, other than that, you're not going to be Matame the rest of Eretz Yisrael by that.
Basically, okay. Those days if you traveled, and then so you had to be sprayed on when you came from Kutlars into Eretz Yisrael. You had to be sprayed.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. Well, that's what we're asking. Actually, so far that's what we're asking. if the nature of the Tumah of Eretz Amim is only because of the Aver, then you don't necessarily have to be sprinkled, because then the Tumah was only that the Chachamim wanted to discourage Kohanim and, to a certain extent, other people from leaving Eretz Yisrael. But in that case, they never made it that it's actually a form of Tumas Nes. But if they say it's Mishum Gusha, if you say it's because of the Dur, then it is a form of Tumas Nes, because you're concerned that may say Mabul or random Goyim, random Jews or whatever, are buried in this Dur. Yeah.
And you definitely walked on earth.
Yeah, that would assume only if you walked on the earth. Exactly. If according to that, but according to that possibility, if you were to go in there in a, if you were to go in there in a box or walking over a bridge or something, then you wouldn't necessarily be talking. Yeah, that's so we're going to continue that point tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
So according to that logic, a Kohen should never be allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael.
Well, again, you know, back when we had to be careful with Tumah B'Tara, maybe not. Nowadays, there's less of an issue with that, because even the Koyim are B'cheskas Tmei Mesim, and so not necessarily does the Gzeira of going to Eretz Amim apply to them.
But it will when we...
When Mashiach comes, that's different. But when Mashiach comes, that's Ruach HaTumah Avim in Eretz anyhow, so... Yeah.
Shkoyach.
Good luck.